Okay, good morning everyone, and
good morning. How was the wedding?
It was unbelievable, thank
you
God.
Got pictures?
I do, I'll show you after that, I do.
What
do you think? I'm a Jewish father, of course I have pictures. Sure, you're right. Actually, I got an email from the photographer today with hundreds of pictures, but I didn't download them yet. But I got some WhatsApp ones. Yeah, cool, you know. And thank you very much. And it was really amazing. And thanks everyone for the good wishes. And yeah, it was very, very, very special. Now we're going to get into Pesach mode. that's the hard part. Yeah, well, got up yesterday morning, so we'll. I am, yeah. But I tried staying up all day yesterday. It worked, but I thought I was going to faint at the night. So I conked that last night.
I'm
okay. All right, so what I want to do today is just a one-off thing on Pesach. Some lessons, life-changing lessons that we can learn from the Seder. We've done similar things in the past, but tried a bit differently today. As we mentioned before, the Seder is interesting because the Seder is one of the most celebrated Jewish experiences, probably kept by all people and all over the world in interesting situations. Everyone knows you sort of have to keep a Seder. And throughout history, what's interesting is that the Seder was kept in the most bizarre situations. We find stories of people celebrating a Seder in the camps, for example, many, many stories, and that itself needs to be understood and processed, how that's possible and what that means, celebrating freedom in situations of tremendous slavery. And when it comes to the Seder also, there are certain things that... There are certain parts of the Seder that everyone knows, like the certain famous parts of the Seder that everyone knows are part of the Seder, like eating matzah, manishtana, the egg. People put a tremendous importance on, especially if you're from South Africa.
Why?
I don't know, just there was a thing.
It's the first time you get to eat. That's the Seder, and you get the egg.
Although there are some deeper meanings behind it, which we'll go through in a minute. But no, you asked in South Africa for some reason there was this thing about the egg that was like you had to eat an egg. Yeah.
I didn't know.
No, wasn't it? No?
I would have
put it in, you cut it up and make a soup, salt. Yeah, that was like a South African thing. And everyone around the table had to have one, and like, although halachically it's actually one of the least necessary things, actually. But anyway, Dayenu, for example, the song Dayenu, all these things are very famous. But what's not always so understood is what the significance of these things are, and how they fit into the whole Seder experience, and why they're so important in terms of what the Seder experience is all about. So I wanted to sort of go through a few and try work through them. So let's begin. We'll do different things on the Seder and try and understand them a little bit. So let's start with the Manishtana, the four questions. I'm not going to go through the specifically four questions itself. We've done that in previous years, but I want to actually address this concept of asking questions altogether. So just to give you a bit of background, we know that asking questions on the Seder night is actually an incredibly important part of the Seder. Why is that? First of all, just understand on a halachic context so that we understand why it's so important, right? One of the mitzvot, one of the commandments on Seder night is to tell the story of the Exodus. That's part of the mitzvah, that we celebrate the Seder, we celebrate the going out of Egypt. The way we do it is telling the story, actually verbalizing the story. That's part of the mitzvah, that's the Haggadah, that's the Avadim Ayinu and Dayenu and so on, actually telling the story of going out of Egypt. But the way the mitzvah is structured, interestingly enough, because really, and this is one of the famous halachic analysis that's on the Seder, the truth is that if we look deeply into the halachic structure of this, we'll realize it's actually a mitzvah to mention the story of going out of Egypt every day, which is part of the Shema, in morning and at night. In fact, we even say it in the Haggadah. There's a famous piece. We talk about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who said that he's like 70 years old and he hasn't managed to convince everyone that it's important to do it in the day and the night until he cited a verse. And the conclusion is that it's important to do every night. It's the third part of the Shema where we mention the going out of Egypt. So the commentaries and the halachic authorities ask the question, so what's different on Pesach night? And there's many, many answers. One is that every single night it's just okay just to mention it, but on Pesach night you're supposed to tell it in great detail. One of the answers is that we find a very important distinction, and that is that every night or every day it's important to thank God for the Exodus from Egypt. Don't forget, the Exodus from Egypt is part of our foundation. It's when, as the prophet says, we were born as a nation. That whole process of going out of Egypt and standing in Har Sinai and so on. But so it's important just to mention it. But on Pesach night, it has to be done in response to a question. There's a verse in the Torah that says, "Ki yishalcha bincha," when your son will ask you, why are we doing all the stuff on the Seder night? You will answer and explain and tell the story of the Exodus. So the story that we tell on Pesach night must be told in response to a question. So much so, not such a well-known thing this, but so much so that the halakha tells us that if someone, obviously if you're sitting at a Seder with children, children ask the question. There's no children, so an adult should ask the question. But to the extent that if someone is in the unfortunate circumstance of conducting a Seder on their own, right? Someone is, God forbid, stuck somewhere. Someone is isolated, whatever the case is, and someone has a Seder on their own, then they have to still ask the questions. That's how it works. They still have to say the manishtana. They have to ask the question and then tell the story in response to that question. Even though they're asking themselves, they're the ones asking the question and giving the answer, right? So, but nevertheless, that's how important it is to have the concept of questions. And the question is why? What's the significance that the story must be told in response to a question? So I'll share with you something that I learned on the plane, actually, going towards New York. I have a little Haggadah. I have a collection of lots of... You know the Haggadah of Pesach is one of the most written about books. Did you know that? They are volumes and volumes of commentary on the Haggadah. It's the most amazing thing. So I have a little hobby. Every year I buy a few more new ones that come out or I haven't had before. I've got I must have about close to 100 different books on the Haggadah. So as I was traveling this time, so I decided, let me find the thinnest ones that I have so I can take on the plane and I'll go through it. So one of the Haggadahs I have is from a great Hasidic Rebbe called the Ishbitzer Rebbe, who happens to be an ancestor of mine through my father's mother's side. So I figured, you know, I've read different things from him, but let me take it on the plane. I'll try to sort of work through it a bit. Semi-successful. So he has a very interesting piece about the Manishtana, and he connects it with something else. And I'll go through with you because it's a very interesting idea. So he quotes something from the Arizal that is well known, that the Arizal says that Pesach, the word Pesach, right, which means Passover, God jumped over the houses and so on, but also comes from the word, it's on your handout there, Pesach. Two words, Pe and Sach, which means the mouth relates. The mouth relates, right? And Kabbalistically we find this very, very important connection between Pesach and this idea of communication. The word Haggadah means to tell, to relate, right? So there's this emphasis on communication. And he says, why is that? So he explains the following. He says that, first of all, he starts to talk about the concept of freedom. What does freedom actually mean? On Pesach, we celebrate freedom. What does it mean to be free? Right? So the way he puts it, which is similar to ideas we've explored in the past, is that freedom essentially is about being free to not be bound by our own personality and to respond in ways which we think are value-based, are correct, right? So he says sometimes a person has a personality which has a particular midah, which is a particular attribute, a particular emotion, a particular personality trait. And then to be able to move away from that if the situation so calls for it, that's freedom, right? In other words, freedom means that I'm emotionally disposed to a particular response, but I can control that and I can respond differently, right? Ultimately, the ultimate level of freedom, which is something which we have to work towards, most of us don't have that, is that it's an easy thing. In other words, because our life is so driven towards doing what is right and our life is so driven towards serving God and living a life of values, that it becomes almost a natural thing, that whatever the values call for, that's where we behave. Whether we like it, whether we don't like it, whether we appreciate it, whether we don't appreciate it, whether we feel that way or not. Now that's a very high level, but most of us at least can work on it that to be the energy of Pesach is this idea of freeing ourselves from ourselves, right? In other words, freedom is an internal thing. Not to be locked into doing things and acting and responding consistent with the way we feel, but rather consistent with the way it is right. Does that make sense? Even though it might be inconsistent with the way we feel. Okay? And that's fundamental, because everyone has their personality, everyone has their dispositions, and freedom means that we're not bound by it, we're internally free. That no matter what is going on around us, no matter how we feel we would like to respond to what's going on around us, we can control that and we can be free to choose what is right or what we know to be right. Yeah? This, by the way, explains also this phenomenon I just mentioned a few minutes ago about people celebrating a Seder throughout history, which I always wondered about, celebrating a Seder in situations of extreme slavery and extreme adversity, like in the camps, for example, where people actually celebrated a Seder. And they made do with what they had. They found a bit of matzah, or they had didn't have matzah, whatever the case was, right? They celebrated a Seder. And obviously the question is, what were they celebrating? What kind of freedom was that? But obviously it's a misunderstanding of what the word freedom means. Freedom doesn't mean to be free to do what you want. Freedom means to be internally free, to respond to whatever is going on around us and to rise above it. So therefore, people were in the camps, nevertheless, even though they were in situations of extreme adversity and extreme slavery, but they chose to feel free. They chose to respond with freedom, which is an amazing idea. Right? But going back to what he says, this idea of not being bound by our own personality. Now, this is very much connected, and maybe I'll just run through it quickly for those of you who might not remember. This is very much connected. He doesn't say this, but it's very much connected with the midnight theory that I've gone through before. People remember the midnight idea? No? Shall I quickly do it again? Okay. So I'll just go it again. One of the things we find on Pesach, it's an amazing idea. One of the things we find on Pesach is in the story of Pesach, that is the emphasis on midnight. That God told Moses that the final plague, the plague of the firstborn, would take place at midnight, right? With tremendous emphasis, to the point that when Moses comes to Pharaoh and he tells him what's going to happen, Moses changes the word a bit. He doesn't say it's going to happen at midnight. He said it'll happen around midnight, because he didn't want them to turn around if their clocks weren't 100% accurate. He didn't want them turning around afterwards and saying, you weren't right, right? You were pretty right, but not exactly. You know, your God is not completely all the way accurate. So Moses said, okay, but God didn't say that. God said it'll happen exactly at midnight, right? And the Zohar says that the plague of the firstborns wasn't just a punishment for the Egyptians, because in fact, at that moment of midnight, two things happened. It was the ultimate punishment for the Egyptians, but it was the defining moment of freedom for the Jewish people. The gift of freedom was actually given to the Jewish people at midnight. They didn't geographically leave till the next morning, but the gift of freedom was given exactly at midnight. And the question is, why midnight? What's the emphasis of midnight? And the question becomes stronger. Some of you will remember that when I share this, I always share this idea that if you actually think about it, the word midnight the idea of midnight doesn't actually exist. You know that? There's no such thing as midnight. Time is a moving, it's a borrowed term. Time is a moving thing. So therefore, if you split a second, even to a millionth of a second, it either belongs to the first half of the night or the second half of the night. There's no such thing as midnight. Right? Any second, it either... By the way, same thing with a piece of paper. You know there's no such thing as the middle of this page? You realize that?
No.
There's no such thing. Because when the first half of the page ends, the second half of the page begins. So any molecule of this page either belongs to the first half or the second half. No such thing as the middle. Right? In I know it's hard, you know, we're not used to that idea, but there isn't. There's no such thing as the middle of the page, no such thing as the middle of the night, or the middle of the day for that matter. It might seem like the middle of the day when the clock hits 12, but it's already into the second part of the night, so it doesn't actually exist. So therefore there becomes a question, why would God emphasize b'chatzot? Why would God emphasize that it's the middle of the night, if in truth the whole midnight concept is a borrowed idea? It's not actually true. Right? But that's the answer. Why? Because Kabbalistically we are taught that the two parts of the night, the first part of the night and the second half of the night, represent two of the main drivers of our personality. And that is Chesed and Gevurah. We are taught the first part of the night represents Gevurah and the second part of the night represents Chesed. Right? Sorry? Oh, because it's becoming lighter. Yeah, that's one idea. Yeah. So the idea being that the way the world was created, the way physical world is created, is everything belongs to one or the other. In other words, the definition of a created being is that it has a definition. Right? In other words, every living being, every created being has a definition and is limited and is bound by that definition. A goat is a goat, a bull is a bull, a table is a table, a chair is a chair. Everything has certain properties, has certain personality traits, has certain definitions, certain properties, and that's what defines it, right? The only thing that is undefined is God. The definition of God is that he's undefined, that he's above all definition. It could be this, it could be that, it could be both together, it could be neither, right? That's godliness, infinity. The definition of any created being, even a spiritual being, is it has a definition. There are angels of chesed, there are angels of gvura. Water is chesed, fire is gvura. Everything that's created, the Kabbalistic, these all traits, it goes back to the one of the 10 powers of creation. Everything has its definition. Now, the concept of freedom is a gift given to the human being that we are able to be free, which means we are able, because of a godly, infinite gift that we are given, we're able to rise above our definition. Because just like everything has a particular definition, most human beings do too. And every human being is created either with a disposition of chesed or the disposition of gvura. Most people are either more gvura people or more chesed people, as we've talked about many, many times, right? Freedom means that we can rise above it, we can rise above our own definition, and we can learn to become, to a certain extent, undefined. That's what freedom means. As the Ishbitzi explains, that we're not limited by those attributes, we're not limited by our emotions, but we can choose how to respond. Right? So, the night is divided into two. The first half of the night is Gvura, the second half of the night is Chesed. Midnight, the concept of midnight, represents an idea which transcends both. It's not the first half of the night, and it's not the second half of the night. And it doesn't exist in the world. Meaning, it doesn't exist within creation. Because within creation, everything is defined. There's no such thing as being above both chesed or gvura. But God says when the moment of freedom happens, it's going to happen at midnight. What does that mean? It's going to happen, it's going to come, it's an energy that's going to come from a source that doesn't exist within this world, but exists within my world, God says. In my world, it's God's world that exists. In God's world that exists, this concept of midnight, meaning the idea of being neither limited or neither bound to chesed or gvura, and not being attached or bound by any definition. That's the idea of midnight. And God says that freedom is going to happen at midnight, meaning freedom is going to come. It's going to be a gift given from a place which doesn't exist within the physical creation, but it exists within God's reality. And that's the gift of freedom. And that's why it says that freedom is given at midnight. Right? It's a similar idea to what he's explaining, that this idea of not being bound by any definition whatsoever. Now he says like this, he says that there's many, many levels of how this works. In other words, the opposite of being free is to be trapped, and to be trapped within our own personality. And we know that people are more or less trapped. In other words, some people are more trapped, some people are less trapped. You have people who are extremely trapped, they're so trapped within themselves that they cannot move at all, they cannot grow at all, they cannot make decisions at all, because they're just trapped within one paradigm, within one reality, and that's a very, very sad reality. Some people are more flexible, but yet they're still trapped, and everyone has to work on their freedom, on their level of freedom, right? Then he quotes an interesting Talmud, which has got to do with why Pesach is called Pesach. He says, you know that the most powerful tool within the human being is communication, right? But it's also the most destructive tool. The Talmud says that the Talmud goes through various parts of the body and their functions. The Talmud has an expression that says, HaPeh Gomer, which means the mouth seals something, right? The hardest time it is to grow is when you've communicated something and you finalized it, right? People often are able to feel something, but yet to be able to overcome it. But when they've expressed it, it's very hard to retract. That's it, right? It's done. You know what I'm saying? So it's the first time I've seen this idea in terms of Pesach, which is amazing. Sometimes like I can feel angry, but it's like, no, let me hold back, you know? Yeah. Once you let go, very hard to come back. Very hard to retract. Right? Sorry? Like once, I'll explain in a second. Once you've hurt someone, once you've insulted someone, once you've expressed an opinion, once you said, no, nah, it's got to be this way, very hard to come back and say, I've changed my mind, right? Very, very hard. So communication, speech, gomer, it seals it. That's it. And therefore, in terms of the opposite of freedom, the mouth, the pair, the mouth, the communication, represents the lowest form of slavery. When you've so trapped in yourself and you've gone and expressed it and you've said it, you know, some people are so trapped and they're not shy to say what they feel, and that's it. Then they can't go back. Pesach gives us the opportunity that even at the lowest form of slavery, we know that we can come back. We can redeem ourselves. We can become free. Pesach is the energy of freedom. That Pesach means that even if we're so trapped to the point of being communicated that's very hard to retract, we can still come back. We can still retract. A human being has that power that it's still possible to change. It's still possible to apologize. It's still possible to reconsider. It's still possible to express a different opinion. It's still possible to free ourselves. It's possible. And in fact, the very tool how it becomes possible is the very tool that's so destructive. Communication. It's the mouth that has to. It's the same tool that got us into trouble. Can be the same tool that releases us. Which is why Pesach is called Pesach. Pesach means it's the mouth that tells and expresses praises to God. That's what the Arizal says. It's the mouth that says the Haggadah. It's the mouth that sings on Pesach night the various songs of praise to God. It's the mouth that gets us out and enhances and nurtures the gift of freedom. Right? How does it work? He says, how does it work? He says, the secret is the Manishtana, the asking of questions. Why? Because the first step, the very first fundamental step to freeing ourselves from ourselves is the recognition that we have a lacking, that we lack something, that we're not perfect, that maybe there's something beyond us, maybe there's something we don't know, maybe there's something, there's a perspective that we can explore that hasn't been our perspective, right? And that's the essence of asking questions. The reason that the story of telling the going out of Egypt on Pesach night has to be done in response to a question is because questioning is the fundamental foundation of freedom. When you ask a question, it means that you realize that you lack something, that you don't know everything. When you ask a question, that is the first sign that you're not trapped. Obviously, we talk about questions, we're talking about asking questions in the correct way. We're not talking about, you know, some people ask questions just to give people a hard time. This is a sincere of questioning, right? Asking questions is a sign that I don't know at all. I'm not completely... People who are very trapped don't ask a lot of questions. They challenge, they don't question. There's a very big difference between challenging and questioning. Right? Questioning, haben shoel, the Talmud says. Manishtana is the child asks. Asks means... And it's interesting that the terminology in the Talmud... He doesn't say this, but it's interesting that the terminology in the Talmud is that the child asks. Now, by the way, it doesn't have to be a young child, right? People always think, you know, we often turn festivals into child-centered festivals, which is beautiful on one hand. On the other hand, it's got a disadvantage also because it becomes like a thing that are for children. It doesn't, you know, it's not relevant to us, it's for the children. And that's not true because Hanukkah, Pesach, Purim, all these things are very child-centered, but it's not child-centered because it's only focused on children. It's child-centered because we need to address the child within ourselves as well. The reason that the terminology is like in some families there's a custom, and we have this custom, my father's house always had this custom, that all children ask Manishtana, doesn't matter how young or old, and even if they're married, right? Even the married children ask questions, ask the Manishtana if their parents at the table, right? There's a different, you know, some families only one child asks, different customs. In our house, Manishtana always would take a long time because every person at the table who had a parent at the table would ask Manishtana, right? Or ask Manishtana. Why? Because why is the terminology about children? Because that's part of what a child is. A child is a symbol of growth. A child is a questioning being. A child is someone who doesn't know everything. Children ask a lot of questions because they sincerely want to know. You know, the why is a child's phrase, right? Why? Because this. Yeah, but why? There's always the but why, right? I mean, to the point where it gets annoying. I know when I was a kid, sometimes when I would annoy my parents with whys, they would tell me it's not Pesach tonight. When it comes Pesach, you can ask as many whys as you want, right? That was the always Pesach, oh, Pesach's question, you can ask. Right? So, but that's a good thing in a way. Children explore, they ask because they know they don't know everything. As we get older, we stop asking sometimes because we think we know. Right? So therefore he says that Pesach is Pesach. It's taking the person who might be so trapped to the lowest form where it's being communicated and being so trapped and being sealed by the mouth. Yet that very mouth can turn it around. When? If it starts with a question. The Haggadah, which is the mouth transforming the negative mouth into growth, into the concept of telling the story of freedom, of cultivating the feeling of freedom and the whole process of freedom within ourselves, the experience of freedom. That whole Haggadah, which is done by the mouth, and it's supposed to be done by the mouth, has to be verbalized. You can't just think about the Haggadah, you have to say the Haggadah. Right? Because communication has that power. Just like it has the power to destroy, it has the power to free. But when does it do it? He says it's got to come in response to a question. Because questioning is the foundation of freedom. When you question, you're showing that maybe I don't know everything. I can still grow. Even though I might have been trapped, even though I might have fallen to the lowest level of slavery, but I can still grow. Now this is tied into another concept to do with Pesach, which is the idea of matzah. Matzah is very central to the Seder, right? On Pesach night, both nights of Pesach in the diaspora, there's a mitzvah, there's a really important mitzvah of eating a big piece of shmurah matzah. Incidentally, if anyone doesn't have shmurah matzah, please let me know and I can organize a few as I've done in the past years. But it is really important for every person at the Seder table to have a big piece, I say a big piece, about a third of a matzah or a quarter of a matzah at least. Right, and to eat it quickly. You know, in Judaism, when we have symbolisms, it's not just symbolisms. We believe that they're sources of energy, and therefore they only happen when we do them. So when we eat matzah, it actually gives us this ability to free ourselves, if we take it on board, that is, right? And that's how mitzvot works. So it's really important mitzvah on Pesach night, try it a big piece of shmurah matzah. What's the idea of matzah? Why is matzah so important on Pesach night particularly? I mean, a whole Pesach, but Pesach night particularly. When I say a whole Pesach, I mean, halachically it's interesting, the whole of Pesach, one doesn't have to eat matzah. One just can't eat bread. You can eat potatoes if you want to, but on Pesach night, by the Seder, it's actually a mitzvah to eat matzah. You have to actually eat matzah. So what's the idea of matzah? So a couple of ideas. First of all, we know that matzah I put it there on your handout, matzah is called bread of the poor man's bread of poverty, as we know, lechem oni, the Gemara says, right? What's the idea of bread of poverty? What's this idea? One idea is that the Jews ate matzahs in slavery. They ate because apparently in ancient times it was very common to feed slaves. Matzah was cheaper apparently. And that was one of the history behind the matzah. But it's much deeper than that, because not just to remember the time of slavery, because really matzah is really more a symbol of freedom. And the famous Maharal of Prague explains, he says that the idea of matzah being a bread of poverty is that it has nothing. It's only bread and water. It's only flour and water. What is the idea? Because one of the ideas of freedom is that you have to detach from the stuff you attach to, from the stuff you're trapped in, right? So one of the ideas of growth, one of the ideas of becoming free, is to let go. Let go of the things that are holding us back. And therefore, the Maharal explains that lechem oni, the idea of lechem oni, the idea of poor man's bread, is positive poverty. He says positive poverty means is that when you grow, it's like the seed that's planted in the earth that has to first disintegrate before it can grow into something new, right? We know when you plant a seed and the seed transitions from a seed into a tree, what actually happens first is that it disintegrates and then grows into a tree. The idea being, because when you grow from one stage of growth to another, you have to first detach, completely detach from the previous experience, the previous paradigm, to embrace something new. As long as we remain attached to the previous ways of thinking, it's very hard to embrace something new completely. You can have incremental growth, but you can't have what they call a paradigm shift, because you have to first let go of something else, right? Which, by the way, is also why the commentaries explain why Pesach is called Pesach from the expression of jumping, right? The word Pesach, Hashem jumped, it says Medaleg. There's a verse in the Song of Songs where it talks about God jumping over the houses. What does that mean? What's the symbolism of jumping? So you know, when you walk, or even when you run, so it's growth, right? We know that human beings are called, angels are called omdim, stationary beings, because angels don't grow. They're holy beings, but they are the way they are. Human beings grow. That's why normally human beings are called mehalchim. They walk. They progress. However, on Pesach, we're not called walkers, we're called jumpers. Why? Because the ultimate growth is symbolizing the idea of jumping. What's the idea? When you walk, although you make progress, but when you put one foot forward, your other foot is always still attached to where you were before. It's not complete growth, right? Jumping is when both feet get off the ground at the same time, where you completely said goodbye to the past so you can embrace something completely new. That's the idea of jumping, right? So that's what Maharal says. That's why matzah is called poverty bread. Poverty bread means you just get rid of everything. You left a clean slate so that you can embrace something completely new, right? Okay, that's one idea. But there's another idea, and it's connected to this questioning idea that I was talking about before. We know that on Pesach, we mentioned this before, but just putting into this idea in this context. We know that the difference between on Pesach, we're supposed to eat matzah, and we're not allowed to eat chametz, right? That's the idea of chametz and matzah. So one of the ideas is that what's the difference between chametz and matzah? Chametz grows, rises, symbol of ego, arrogance, which is of course why we remain trapped in ourselves. It's all our own ego. Matzah is humility. It doesn't grow. It's being humble enough to invite something else in and to grow in a way where we don't get trapped in our own ego. But we also know a beautiful idea, and that is like this. If you take, and I put it down the handout so you can have a look at it. If you take the two Hebrew words of matzah and chametz, right? They're very similar. Matzah is mem tzadik hey. Chametz is ches mem tzadik, right? Which means mem and tzadik are the same two letters, both in chametz and matzah. Okay, one is a final tzadik, but it's still a tzadik, right? So what's the difference between the chametz and matzah? One letter, the chet and the hey. What's the difference between a chet and a hey? Very little. It's one little opening. What's the idea? Right? So the hey is the top line, of the right line, and the left leg, which is detached from the top. Yeah. And in the chet, the left leg is not detached from the top. Right? What's the idea? Many, many ideas behind this. One of the ideas is as follows. The three lines of the chet and the hey represent the functionality of a person. The way we operate is we operate through three mediums, which is thought, speech, and action. Right? Thought, speech, and action. So it says the top line is thought, the right line is speech, and the left line, the left leg is action. What's the bottom space represent? The bottom space represents the ability to fall, to fail. Why? Because human beings are imperfect beings, and human beings fail. That's what it is. We sometimes drop out of the chet or the hay. Right? That's the bottomless opening. The difference between the chet and the hay, however, is this. The hay, both people who are, and the hay is what creates matzah, which is the most positive thing on Pesach, most powerful thing on Pesach. The chet represents the chametz, which is the most negative thing on Pesach, right? So it's a very interesting mitzvah. The prohibition of eating chametz on Pesach is worse than kashrut. In other words, it's the most, it's not to eat chametz on Pesach is a very, very important thing. On the other hand, eating matzah on Pesach night is an unbelievable mitzvah. So what's this extreme, right? Chametz and matzah. And it's all in this little opening. The difference is this. Both people fail, because we all fail. Even those of us who work on freedom, and we try to become free, we try to grow. The way the graph of the human being and its development works is that we don't go up in a straight line. We progress, sometimes we fail, we go back. It's complex, right? It's complicated. The difference between the chametz and the matzah is the chet and the hay is this. The hay is someone who knows that even if he or she fails and falls through the bottom, there is a way to crawl back in at the top. That's the hay. The hay is, I'm big enough to say, I did fall, but I can crawl back in. There's a way back in. I can ask questions, I can explore, I can apologize, I can investigate, I can learn, I can reflect, I can repent. All of these things, right? That's the whole idea. That's why we have this idea of being able to reconnect, of being able to ask questions or reflect on what we've done and to learn from our failings and to learn from the past and to come back. That's That's what the hay is. The chet, which creates chametz, represents arrogance. What's the arrogance? The arrogance is the person who says, that's it, I'm failed, but I'm not going back. I'm so stuck, there's no way I can go back. The chet person will not recognize that there's a way back in, or doesn't want to recognize a way back in because they're so stuck and they've sealed their being trapped to such an extent that there's no willingness or no ability sometimes to crawl back in. And that's chametz. That's arrogance, and that's just a trapped person who cannot become free. In order to create matzah, there has to be the humility that even though we do fail and we do things that aren't right sometimes, but we can, there's a way back in. To understand the way back in. But the difference is like this. To fall is very easy. To climb back in is not so easy. In other words, the opening of re-entry is on the top. The space of failing is not on the top, it's at the bottom, because to fall is easy. It takes strength, it takes humility, it takes willingness, it takes determination, it takes resilience to say, no, I can do this, I can come back in. And that's the energy of Pesach. What's the foundation? And the energy of Pesach is to understand that even if we've failed miserably, even like the Ishbitzer says, even if we've sealed it with bad communication, there's always a way back, but we have to have that humility. We have to begin by asking questions. What did I do wrong? By reflecting. How am I trapped? What could I have done differently? How could I control myself more? What attribute could I embrace that maybe is not my natural personality that will help me grow? And that's the energy of Pesach, and that's the foundation of Pesach. So that's the matzah, and that's the manishtana. Just the power of asking questions. I want to just talk a little bit about the egg. As I said, halachically, the egg doesn't... the reason, just to give you a bit of background, the reason it's on the Seder table to begin with is as follows. The Seder plate, I should say, has different things, right? We know it has the maror, of course, which we eat, the charoset, which we have as a... to remember the slavery, the mortar, the cement, and so on. Also, it's got apples inside, which is a symbol of the Jewish people, because we were born under apple trees, we were taught in the Medrash. Then we have the shank bone and the egg. What is that? So first of all, in times of old, in temple times, when they sat down to the Seder, there were two sacrifices. Okay? There were two sacrifices that they would eat. One was called the Korban Pesach, and one was called the Korban Chagiga. There was a paschal lamb that they would eat as part of the mitzvah of the Seder. But there was also another sacrifice they would eat first, which is called the Chagiga, a festival sacrifice. And the reason they ate it was because there needs to be the Pesach sacrifice had to be eaten as a dessert. It was eaten as when you were already full. It wasn't eaten as the main course, even though it was meat, but it wasn't eaten as the main course. It was eaten after the main course. So the main course was the first sacrifice called Chagiga. So today we don't have either of those sacrifices. So what we do is on the Seder table we just have things to remember. So the shank bone is to remember the Paschal lamb, and the egg is to remember the Chagiga offering. That's why we have it. So why an egg? You can have any cooked food really, but why an egg? The reason for the egg is because one of the reasons for the egg is round, which is a symbol of infinity. Some say the egg is also a symbol of mourning, as we know that the mourners eat eggs. And there's a touch of that during the Seder table to remember that our Seder table is not complete because we're not in the temple, we don't have the temple, we don't have the offerings. So there's a bit of that touch of mourning that goes into it as well. Okay. So that's one of the many, many reasons why it's an egg. An egg is also a symbol of the Jewish nation. An egg is the only food that the more you cook it, the harder it gets. Right? Interesting thing. Other foods all around, right? You cook it, gets softer. Egg is something, the more you cook it, the harder it gets. Like the Jewish people, the more they try to challenge us, the stronger we get. And that's the strength of the Jewish people. And that's testimony to the fact that we're still around and we're still strong and we're still here. Right? But the Ishbitzer says, in the same Haggadah, he says a beautiful idea about the egg. I think I might have mentioned this before, but he says a beautiful idea. He says an egg is there's something else very unique about the egg, which is another reason why it's on the Seder table and why some people eat it. Now again, halachically, you don't have to eat it. In fact, much more important to eat matzah on Pesach night. Much more important to drink four cups of wine and the matzah. Those are very important, mitzvahs, the maror, the lettuce. The egg is a custom. I mean, no problem. If people want to eat it, that's fine, but it's not crucial. However, its symbolism is very strong. So he explains the following idea. The egg is an interesting food in that when you cook an egg, or when you have an egg, when an egg is laid, on the one hand, it's perfect, meaning it's something which is edible. It can be used as is, right? It's fully functional. An egg is a functional piece of food. Yet, an egg is also an incomplete food, because the ultimate goal of an egg is that it should hatch into a chicken. Right? When an egg is laid, the original concept of an egg is that an egg then is set on by its mother, whatever the case is, and then it hatches into a chicken. So you have these two things with an egg, that's complete and it's incomplete. On the one hand, it is something functional to be used right now, yet it's something which is very incomplete because it has an ultimate goal. And explains, that's what Pesach is all about. When we talk about freedom, freedom is relative. And that's why we have this fundamental idea that every year we have to re-experience Exodus, right? Very important idea. We don't, in Judaism generally, by the way, it's an often misunderstood concept. We don't celebrate, we don't commemorate experiences. We re-experience them, right? On Pesach, we don't commemorate the Jews going out of Egypt 3,300 years ago. We re-experience the going out of Egypt. What does that mean? That every year we have to re-experience, and this, by the way, is very much emphasized in the Haggadah. We talk about b'chol dor v'ador, every generation we have to see ourselves if we are going out of Egypt. We have to go out of our own Egypt and so on and so forth. And in fact, we have to do this every single day, right? Because going out of Egypt is a process. What does that mean? Egypt, which is in Hebrew is the word Mitzrayim, as we've talked about many times, comes the word Meitzar, borders. It's the trap, it's the prison, it's our own self-imposed prison that we get trapped in with our own personality, as we spoke about before. Yetziyat Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt, means to go beyond our borders, to go beyond our own prison, to be free ourselves from our own imprisonment, right? However, that's relative. What that means is that when I go out of Egypt today, I go beyond my comfort zone today, I go out of my own borders today, I become untrapped today, my exodus today is my Egypt next week. You follow? In other words, when I go beyond my... Because we know that we've talked about this many times. You don't go out of Egypt. It's the attitude that we have to free ourselves. But you can't do everything at once. We can go a little bit more today. We can go on Pesach. We can take a bit of a bigger shift maybe. But ultimately, we've got a lot to do. So when we go out of Egypt today, that's amazing. And that needs to be celebrated. But it's like the egg. Every time we go out of our own Egypt, it's like the egg. Meaning, on the one hand, it's to be celebrated. It's an egg. It can be used. It's functional. Yet there's still a way to go. We have to realize that. We have to realize that it's not final. Just like the egg is not final, it still has to be hatched into a chicken. So too, it's not final because our own exodus today is our Egypt next week or next month. Because once we get used to it and our new reality becomes our comfort zone and we get comfortable with it, then we have to move forward again. Right? And then that's why we have to keep doing that. So every year we go out of a different Egypt. Every year the Egypt and the exodus are different. We move the posts, and he says that's the concept of the egg on the Seder table, which is the idea of relative growth, celebrating the exodus that we experience now, but yet realizing there's still a way to go. In historic sense, that's the whole idea of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We know that when the Jews left Egypt, it was an amazing redemption. It was an amazing redemption that they became a nation. So that was an amazing celebration. Yet we are taught the redemption wasn't complete because they still had subsequent exiles. The ultimate redemption will be Mashiach comes, and that's the same idea. That when they went out of Egypt, it was like the egg, but there's still a way to go, and the ultimate chicken, so to speak, is when Mashiach will come. I'll just end with one final idea, and that is the four sons, as we call them in the Haggadah, the Arba Banim. Because, and I mean, there's so many different explanations there, but I just want to share one, and that is that one of these concepts of freedom is that we don't do it alone, right? That we have to help each other become free. One of the ideas is that there's personal freedom, there's personal exodus, but there's also the collective exodus. In other words, we have to reach out and support each other, because people, it's very hard sometimes to grow on our own and to go out of our own prison alone. We have to do it together, which is part of what the whole Four Sons is about on Pesach night, where we engage in different people and different people's responses, and we help them go out of the Egypt. Right? So there's four sons. We say the wise son, the wicked son, the simple son, and the one who can't even ask questions. Right? So going back to the whole question idea, what do these four sons actually represent? So the four sons represent different ideas, and perhaps different ideas of how we respond to others, to help them in their freedom, and also how we respond to ourselves. So the one son, the wise son, is on the right track. He's just asking a lot of questions, sincere questions. So the Haggadah says you've got to engage. In other words, when people ask questions, we have to take notice. When children ask questions, we have to take notice. Because question is a good thing. Question is a really, really good thing. Questions means that people are on the right track, as we said before. The Chacham, the wise one asking a question, means is on the track to real freedom, but we can't dismiss questions. When people ask questions, we have to embrace them. If they're sincere questions, we have to embrace them, we have to engage with them, and that's part of what, as a parent or as a friend or whatever it is, the relationship we have to other people in helping them along in their freedom, people ask sincere questions. Questions are good things. In Judaism, question is, we have faith on the one hand, which means that ultimately we realize we don't understand everything, and even if we have questions, it doesn't matter. But on the other hand, questions are a good thing because God wants us to understand. He wants us to explore. He wants us to investigate, and therefore engaging in questions, that's the Chacham. Then we have the wicked son, which is very interesting. Now the wicked son on the surface, if you have a look at the Haggadah, seems very strange. Right? Because the wicked son challenges. The wicked son doesn't ask questions. He challenges. And he says, why are you doing this? Like, in other words, nothing to do with me. Why are you doing this kind of thing? Ma'avadah zot lachem. And if you have a look at the Haggadah, it appears on the surface that we're very sharp with the wicked son. Right? We said we're doing this because Hashem took us out of Egypt. And we say, Ilu haya sham, if he would be there, if he would be in Egypt, he wouldn't have been redeemed. Right? And that's a very harsh thing to say to someone. We have to understand, we have to appreciate that the Rasha, the wicked son, represents someone who at least is there, at least at the table. Might be challenging, but he's at the table, right? You know, the Babich Rebbe always used to talk about the fifth son. Right? We have to go look for the fifth son, the one that never shut up. Right? And we have to, and there's a lot of fifth sons, unfortunately, so we have to go see them and find them and bring them closer. But the Rasha, the wicked son, at least he's there. So why don't we treat him nicely? Like, why don't we? You know? So he explained an unbelievable thing, that if you actually look at the words, it's actually completely the opposite. We actually are sending the Rasha, wicked son, an incredible message, and it's a message to send to, you know, we all have the four sons within us, actually, which is another discussion, but we have that challenging part within us, and we have to understand what the message is. We do read in the Chumash that the whole Jewish nation didn't go out of Egypt. You know that. There was quite a big portion of the Jewish nation that didn't want to go out, and they didn't go out. They died within the days of the plague of darkness. However, we also have, the Talmud tells us and the Tanakh tells us, that when the ultimate redemption will take place, every Jew will be redeemed. There will be no one will be left behind. What's the difference? The difference is, before we became a nation, and before the gift of freedom was given to us, it was possible to be excluded. And it was possible for us to exclude ourselves. Right? But once God gave us that gift of freedom, once we became a nation, once that connection was established, it is actually impossible for us to divorce ourselves from the process. We could try, but ultimately, there's always hope. It doesn't matter how far we have fallen, doesn't matter how much we want to challenge or how much other people want to challenge us or the system or the belief, there's always that spark of freedom that exists within every single person. And that's what we tell the wicked person. When the wicked son starts a challenge, we say, you know what? Ilu hayash, what you're doing is outdated. Because ilu hayasham, if you would have been there in Mitzrayim before the giving of the Torah, before the birth of the Jewish nation, then you wouldn't have been able to be redeemed. Then you wouldn't have been redeemed, you're right. But now, you're part of it. So come close. In other words, the message to the Rasha is actually the opposite of what it seems to be saying. The message to the wicked son is, no matter what you do, I will never give up on you. Because once Yitziat Mitzrayim happened, once the Exodus happened, you're always there. So you can challenge as much as you want, but I'm never going to give up. And that's part of helping others grow to believe in them and to believe that no matter how much we ourselves may have become trapped or others may become trapped, we can still believe in them. Then there's the Tam, the simple son, which doesn't know the details of asking questions, but asks something. He says, Mazot. He says, what is this? He just doesn't know even what to ask. But he knows he has to ask, but doesn't know what to ask. It's also a lesson. Sometimes we have to pick up on the cues. We have to just remember, if we have a little opening, to grab the opening. The Tam says, what is this? So grab that question and say, oh, that was a good question. Come in. Let me help you. Let me work with you. It might not be a sophisticated question, but at least that there's a desire. At least there's something there of sincerity, and therefore we have to reach out and try to help that person. And then the Haggadah tells us that the son, Sheinah Yedei Elisha, doesn't know what to ask. Totally lost. So There we are taught, we have to take initiative. The Haggadah says, At Psach Lo, you have to open up for him. Go. You try, get the question out of him, because everyone has an ability to ask. Everyone has an ability to grow. Everyone has an ability to explore. So if the person seems to be totally lost, doesn't even know what to ask, explain to them what the question is. Ignite the culture of questioning. Ignite the enthusiasm of questioning. And when you do that, you'll be able to bring that person. So therefore, that's the idea. There's diversity and there's differences, but we can't give up on anyone, and we can't give up on any part of ourselves, that is, also. And we can, especially when it comes Pesach, we can all taste and believe in tasting that process and experience of freedom. So that's just, I mean, the Seder is very long, and we take a long time to go through all the concepts of the Seder, but those are just some thoughts on the Seder. So let me just wish everyone a really Chag HaShem V'Sameach. And again, if anyone wants Shmur Matzah, please let me know. And just have a Chag Sameach.